Hey everybody, welcome to our Tick Bootcamp podcast. We're here today with Dan Wagner from Ohio and our special guest co-host, Alexandra Brooke Clark. I'm really excited to have them both here tonight, and Alexandra's going to kick it off. So, Alexandra, if you can jump right in and walk us through Dan's story.
Sure. Hi, everybody. Hi, Dan.
Hi.
I'm so happy to be here. And I want to kind of start off by talking about your childhood, where you grew up. Did you have a normal childhood, siblings? Were you spending a lot of time outside? All of the fun stuff.
Yeah, so I came from a family that moved around quite a bit in my childhood. I was born in California, and we moved to Michigan, Upper Michigan, Lower Michigan, Maryland, Florida, Ohio. We moved around a lot. At the time, my parents met while my father was in the military. They met over in Germany, and they kind of started making their life together once he got out of the military back here in the United States.
Okay.
They have a pretty cool story. He took my mom out on a date on a Harley in Germany, with like all the beautiful castles and everything like that out there. So kind
Oh
of
my
one of those
God.
really cool stories that I get to
Yeah.
share about my parents. And they're still together to this day and doing really well. But yeah, my childhood, it was a fairly normal childhood. I was the oldest of four children, two younger brothers and the youngest is a sister. She grew up very tough. So it's definitely interesting, but she was very safe, which is a good thing.
Yeah, that's
And but no, I had a very, very normal childhood, very active. I played sports constantly. Looking back, I still don't know how my parents carted us all around all the time to everything that we did as children. Very good education and very healthy. Never really went to the doctor for anything. Rarely got sick. Just had a very, very good childhood. I had some circumstances here and there as I got into my 20s and later into my 20s where I started having some ectopic beats, and that's the only thing that was weird. And they were just kind of out of nowhere sometimes. And it's possible that some of that stuff is congenital from family. At one point, I had a cardiologist that thought I had some dysautonomia type symptoms in my 20s. So, and that's the only thing that kind of I experienced up to that day, up to that point, I should say.
Okay. And were you living what we would say now a clean form of childhood? Were you eating fairly healthy? Were you taking care of yourselves? I know it was such a different time than it is now.
Yeah.
What would you say that you were living a fairly clean life growing up?
So I believed I was when I
Yeah.
was younger, right?
Yeah,
So
like we all
it's kind
did.
of funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we all, that's one thing. We all have a very different relationship with food nowadays
Right.
and just our
Right.
lifestyles and kind
Right.
of understanding kind of what we did to ourselves. And we're kind of, I mean, obviously, I think all of us through probably high school and college probably did some really horrible things to our bodies. And it's very unfortunate. And luckily, the younger body can handle a lot of stuff. But as far as food is concerned, a lot of homemade meals and things like that. But definitely, as I got a little bit older, there were some things where, I probably put quite a taxing on my body as far as trying to detox certain things I was consuming. And I think I'd set my body up for kind of what it ultimately became me getting sick. I
Right.
think it's very possible that my immune system might have been able to fight things off later if I would have eaten better now that I know what I did wrong in the future.
Right.
So yeah, very, very interesting to look back on that and think about it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So when you grew up and where did you land? Where are you living now? You're living in Ohio?
Yeah, so my family's been pretty nomadic for the most part. If you told me I had to get up and move across the country tomorrow, like it wouldn't really faze me. We're just used to moving and going where we need to. I ended up Cincinnati, Ohio. With that being said, I've traveled a lot just in my lifetime. I love traveling in general, and also for work, I took a job that has taken me as far as China and just constantly on the move, and it's something that has become a passion of mine. I think different cultures and different places around this planet are just mind-blowing, right? Pictures and videos really don't do them justice until you get there and actually talk to those people or see that beautiful scene. So landed in Ohio, just north of Cincinnati, but definitely all over the place all the time. And I also now have a Mercedes Sprinter van that's been converted by Winnebago that I do a lot of traveling and working out of. So
Oh,
probably
that's
half the
so
year
cool.
I'm just traveling all around the West and also other parts of the country as well. So
that's so cool.
Yeah.
I love that.
It's awesome.
So you just pick up and go wherever you need to go in the van?
Yeah. So I have a very corporate 9-to-5 job. Mm-hmm. I was traveling around in a 4Runner that had a rooftop tent, and I did that for a while. I actually did that while I was sick, and we can get to that probably here in a little bit. But eventually I got a job to where I was managing an entire supply chain for a business and had a bunch of people under me. I needed kind of like a mobile office. The 4Runner wasn't a good mobile office, unfortunately. So I ended up going out there. I'm like, I'm going to buy a van. And I did that. And with Starlink now, you can work from almost anywhere in the world and just have a fantastic connection. So
that's really great. That's really special. What a great experience. So it seems like you were so active. You were running around the world. You were getting on a plane. You were driving in your car. You probably were sleeping a whole lot. It was probably hard to keep that healthy diet we were just talking about. But can you share with us when symptoms, you know, started for you?
Yeah, absolutely. So as you said, I wasn't sleeping that much my entire life. I probably slept 4 to 5 hours a night most of my life. And wow. I've never needed caffeine. Honestly, if I had any caffeine, it'd probably send me to the moon. just like, you wouldn't want to be around me, honestly. Like, I would be fired up. But there was a point back in 2020 where I had a position where I worked, I don't know, like 8 hours a week for the most part. It was a very relaxed job. And so I had an opportunity to do a lot of traveling. At the time, an ex-girlfriend and I traveled around going to a bunch of national parks. And just prior to 2020, I would say probably 2018, 2019, I had an issue where I passed out one time very randomly. Like I've never had that issue or anything. I was just helping my brothers push. When my dad had a Porsche that had a bad clutch in it, and my brothers and I pushed up the driveway, and out of nowhere, I just dropped. And that was after having some frequent ectopic beats. And so like there's palpitations and things like that. And if you're not used to feeling your heart not beat correctly, it's a scary experience for a lot of people. So at the time I passed out after I was already seeing the doctor for like ectopic beats. I passed out in front of my mom and brothers. And I remember coming to and looking up. I'm like, dang it. I did that in front of my mom.
Oh, they were like, hey, we're so worried.
So she was so worried. So I was like, all right, I'll go to the hospital. I go in there, like, you're one of the healthiest people in here. I was like, all right, that's cool. So fast forward. And at the time, it was a stressful time in my life. I was dealing with basically kind of going through a divorce at the time. Okay. And so, so that there was a stressful time. And I think that kind of lended to a little bit of that, but those ectopic beats and things like that just didn't seem normal, especially for someone who I was still active running.
Going out. Sorry to interrupt. Can you describe the heart issue some more? Because we hear a lot about heart issues, heart palpitations, et cetera, coming on as early symptoms for people in the Lyme community. So can you describe what that was like for you? Because you mentioned it was like a scary feeling, right?
Yeah. So, you know, most people do not feel their heart beating ever. They'll never feel it unless maybe they're laying down and like, it's just a very rare circumstance for a lot of people. I could always feel my heartbeat, actually. It's a very bizarre thing to talk to people and they're like, yeah, I can't feel my heartbeat. What are you talking about, man? Right. That's crazy. So when it starts skipping, and when I say skipping, and I know a lot more about it now, it would have an extra beat. So mine, my heartbeats were the upper chamber. So the ectopic is somewhere near the sinus node. So the upper chamber would pump twice. Essentially, you'd pump. It's usually like this. So the upper, lower, and it's kind of circulating through the pump, right? So what would happen is my upper chamber would pump and then pump again. That would give you extra volume down in the lower chamber. And then when you have that thud, it you have that extra volume down there, and I could feel that, and it was kind of a terrifying. You're like, if my heart stops, like I'm done, right? Like when your blood stops flowing and stops going to your brain, that's when you're done in life. And I was a little concerned about it. And I think for a lot of people, when they start experiencing that, that is stressful for them. The term would be like health anxiousness or health anxiety. I think a lot of people deal with that kind of thing. I've had a really weird relationship with death in my life. I've always seen death as just part of life. I haven't been scared of death. But
Right.
again, like I didn't want to be a burden on other people if I were to like die early or something like that. So it was concerning. And what happens is when you're stressed out, it kind of propagates heart related issues. So like stress is not a good thing when you're dealing with issues. So looking back on this, there's a lot of people in the Lyme community that I have spoken to that had the same exact onset of like palpitations and ectopic beats. Fast forward into 2020, when things started to really kind of take off, I woke up in what I thought was probably AFib. I'd wake up in the middle of the night and just terrifying, where my heart is racing. And then there's times where I believe they call it inappropriate sinus tachycardia, and my heart would just be racing 130, 140 beats per minute as I'm laying down.
Just
And
out of
it
nowhere, just
out of nowhere.
you would just wasn't like you went on a really long run or you did heavy exercise. You would just be laying down, it would just come out of nowhere.
2 or 3 a.m. And just like I
Oh.
wake up and I'm like, oh, like what is
Oh,
going
worst
on?
time. Yeah, that's horrible.
And it's very possible it could have been an adrenaline dump as well. When I was looking, I of course everyone has an Apple Watch or something like that now, where you can take just like a single lead, and some of the on the ECG, you can kind of see where it could have been adrenaline and stuff like that when I started looking at that. So I started trying to learn about those things, because I'm like, at the time, I got sick of going to doctors all the time. I was like, I don't want to go to cardiologist for this. I'm a young dude, and I didn't want to do that. But but the very early things I dealt with, as far as any health concerns in my life, were just cardiac related things. And so that's kind of where I think things might have started for me. And I'll tell you, and we'll kind of get further into the story. I've had ticks on me my entire life. I'm someone that goes out into the middle of nowhere with just shorts on. Not good. I didn't know any better. So I've been covered in ticks, I don't know how many times in my life, and I'm sure they've bitten me several times.
Okay.
So but if you want, I can kind of get to where I guess the straw gets broke the camel's back, if you'd
Yeah,
like to hear.
so I'm interested. So you started having these irregular heartbeats, and I know you mentioned you saw multiple doctors. So you would go to the doctor, they would look at you, what would they do? What EKG? What are they doing the standard testing and then saying, okay, on your way, and then you go home, it happens again. What happens there? What's your journey with the medical industry? Are you finding new doctors? Are you only Western medicine? Do you start doing functional? I'd love to hear about that.
So I primarily just stuck with Western medicine early on. I had those issues with the heart. When I ended up passing out, I went to another cardiologist just to get another opinion, because it was such a bizarre circumstance for me. Obviously my family saw it, and they were very concerned at the time. And so I went to go see them. I did echoes, I did EKGs, and I mean, when you're at the time, what was I, 29? When you're 29 years old and still in pretty good shape, you go into the cardiologist, they're like, "We haven't seen hearts like this in a little while. Like, it's kind of nice seeing like a nice heart." I'm like, "Thanks, I appreciate you guys liking my heart." So that's kind of cool. So I saw them, and had them take a kind of look at everything, and I was fine. So times, basically, what would happen is I would just try to forget about it and just live life, and something else would happen where I just kind of felt weird, and then I'd try to forget about it and keep on going in life. So that was kind of early on. And I had probably 2 year stretch there where I didn't have anything that was at least concerning enough to go say, "All right, I need to go see like a cardiologist or my primary care physician." So
Okay, and then things progressed and got worse.
So the whole world got crazy. So 2020 came around. I actually started a new position in February of 2020. It was an executive director role that was a lot of fun. I traveled a lot and got a huge travel budget, so I was excited to go see the world. And like, they're like, "Hey, the world shut down. You can't go travel." So
Oh, first
that was
time.
a crazy turn. But at that time, an ex-girlfriend of mine at that time, she and I started doing quite a bit of travel. She was a teacher, so she was able to go out in the summertime, and we'd go to national parks and just go all these cool places. And in June of 2020, We went to basically the West. So we flew into Vegas and we just started going to all these national parks. It was awesome. The national parks were empty. There wasn't anyone in the national parks at the time. We had a lot of these places to ourselves, and we were hiking. And she and I got severely dehydrated, and it was a scary circumstance. I don't think enough people talk about how bad dehydration really is. There's nothing we can do, and we basically did this big circle to like Zion National Park, places like Grand Canyon, places like that, and came back to Vegas. And we're sitting there in Vegas, getting ready to leave the next day, dehydrated, feeling like we were dying, heart issues, and like all those ectopic beats and stuff came back for me. And I was like, "We're in Vegas." I was like, "There are IV places everywhere. We don't need to
Everywhere,
go to the
right?
hospital." So I was like, "Let's go get an IV." So we ended up getting an IV, and basically that got us to a point where we felt like we were just hungover, and we were
Okay.
able to fly home. Kind of got checked out, and that kind of started a little more ectopic beats for me at that point. So I started experiencing more of them. It really sucked. I just I when you're trying to live life and go be active, and your heart just feels like it's skipping, it's kind of scary. So that's
Yeah.
something I was experiencing at the time. Again, it's something I put at the back of my mind and tried to not worry about it as much. Fast forward to June of 2021, she and I took a trip up to Upper Michigan. And so we were up there camping. I had a camper. We went to kind of the Traverse City area, where the sand dunes are, where Empire is, Empire Bluff, just very gorgeous place. And then we went up to the Umpqua Peninsula, went to a car show that's up in St. Ignace. If you guys have not been up there during the summertime, it is a magical place in Upper Michigan. It's just so gorgeous up there. And we ended up getting back, and I believe I got some type of bug bite somewhere around kind of like near my pant line. And so I couldn't really see what it was, but I could tell it was a bug bite. And I was like, "Well, that's weird."
Was
And
this on your trip or when you returned?
when I returned, I noticed it. Yeah. So literally the day we got back to
Okay.
Ohio, and it's, I don't know, 9 hour drive back. And so I was like, "That's interesting." Didn't really think of anything of it, right? So I was like, "Ah, yeah, whatever." And she and I at that point, we were kind of deciding, just amicably, to kind of make a se just separate. And
Okay.
we had like a pretty good relationship, but we didn't see things moving forward, and it was just kind of it was tough. Like, yeah, it just kind of sucks that that happened. And at the same time, we were living in a place, and I was starting to move my stuff out. And at night, I just kept getting woken up in the middle of the night, just like a racing heart and stuff like that. I was like, "Man, I don't know if this is stressed or what's going on," but it was just like accelerated. I was just having these really bad circumstances. And that was July of 2021. And I would go to the doctor. I'd go in there. They're like, "Dude, you're good. Like, you're the healthiest person in this building." I was like, "All right." And then at that time, I was like, "All right, well, I'm going to move back with my folks." They had a nice big place, and I'll just move there and kind of determine where I want to go. I'm so happy I moved back with them at the time, because then my health just declined exponentially. That July and August was very, very rough. That's when everything just went downhill. I ended up being kind of bedridden for about 2 weeks.
You went from 0 to 100.
I would say from 100% down to zero. Yeah.
Well, right, but
Yeah.
right.
So no, I it was a very fast decline.
Yeah.
It was bad. So I ended up, the biggest symptoms I had was just overall fatigue. My entire body was just inflamed. Now I know it was inflamed. I was just in pain everywhere. I could not lay flat on my back, or I would just have this shooting pain down my chest, and it would just make me have really, really bad palpitations. So I had to sleep on my sides, and then just a few days later, I couldn't lay on my side. It would cause horrible palpitations, and I would have to sit up to sleep. So my heart just wasn't, like, basically every other beat was like a palpitation. It was a horrible circumstance, and also just the shooting pain.
Yeah.
I was in and out of the doctor, going to ERs at the time, trying to figure things out. Went to a few different places, and they're like, "There's nothing wrong with you, man." Even though in my even the my saturation levels were dropping too, and like, they're like, "Oh, you're fine. It's not a big deal." But I had saturation levels into the 80s, which was not normal for me at all. So they were just, they didn't really know what to do, unfortunately.
I don't mean to interrupt you. I'm just curious,
No, go ahead.
what kind of testing were they doing when you would go in? So you'd go in and you'd say, I'm in pain. I'm having irregular heartbeats. Are they giving you CAT scans, MRIs? Are they checking your body? Are they looking for anything physical that's on your body? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so going back, I actually looked at some of the tests that I had. You can go back on my chart and see almost everything now if you're in like going to big hospital networks, if you're into Western medicine and stuff. But yeah, so I went back and there's like 80 different panels that were ran just in the last few years, right? So at the time they were doing just kind of your standard panels. Hey, what's your cholesterol? What's your glucose levels? Like, are we gonna, they did give me a CAT scan. We did X-rays. At the time, I think a little bit later on, we did do an MRI without contrast. I went to like a pro scan or something for that. And I had all of these tests come back basically showing that I was just incredibly healthy. The inflammation was a little bit high. And there's some other things that were out of whack, maybe because of supplements I was taking at the time. And yeah, it was frustrating. I had a doctor that was trying to prescribe me benzos and like, and just, I mean, they're like, hey man, like this is what we think you've got going on. They're trying to get me on beta blockers and all these other things. And so I had kind of a background. At the time I was working for the pharmaceutical company. I'm somebody that I don't even like taking Tylenol or even ibuprofen. I've never really have. And so I understand that when taking drugs, there's a cost plus cost slash benefit to almost anything you take, whether it is acetaminophen or oxycodone, right? So like there's always kind of a cost to taking a magic pill. And so at the time, I just kept saying, no, I don't want to do that. And I'm usually as cool as a cucumber, no matter what. That's kind of, even in my career, that's what I'm known for, is just being in really tough situations and just always keeping a level head. Even in this, where I felt like I was dying, I still was just very calm about it. But my body was just absolutely on fire. It was one of the worst circumstances. People talk about being in a dark place and having really bad thoughts. I didn't get to a point where I would consider myself suicidal. But there was times where I was driving and I'm like, oh man, like if that semi came across and hit me, like, you know what? I won't have to deal with this anymore,
It'd
right?
be
Just
so bad.
really, yeah, really dark
Can I
thoughts like
ask you,
that.
did you ever, and I know when I was in it, I never thought about this because Lyme disease wasn't even on my radar, but at any point, did you say, I just recently had a tick bite or a bug bite? At any point, did that correlation come up, or it was totally out of, the
Yeah.
scope of reality at that point?
So at the time, that was out of the scope of reality. I think when I finally, so for 2 weeks is I was bedridden for 2 weeks. I'll tell you kind of how I got out of that. But so the whole bedridden thing, I think I can deal with pain. I've broken a lot of stuff and hurt myself very badly growing up, whether it is sports or bikes or mountain biking or whatever. I did a lot of abuse to my body when I was younger. But it was the heart stuff, like the sharp heart pains when I was trying to sleep, not being able to sleep. I think a lot of people, when you're in that state, that fight or flight state, it is so hard to sleep. And that lack of sleep really puts you in a really dark place. And not being able to lay flat sucked. And so at the time, I didn't know this. I was just so inflamed. And I was going through and reading everything I could read. I'm used to going through FDA documents, just really arduous documents that I have to go through. So I was like, you know what, my doctors can't figure this out. I'm start going through medical journals. And then I started looking at nerves kind of being compressed and issues with nerves and nerves causing a lot of issues. So I was like, all right, maybe this is kind of a direction I can go. What can I do to relieve some of that compression of those cranial nerves? So then I ended up saying, all right, I can go to like maybe a massage therapist. I ended up calling a guy. I do consider myself a Christian, and I consider this like a kind of a God thing that happened. I called him. And this one massage, I mean, everyone, I called everybody and there was like no one available. I called this gentleman named Todd, who is a massage therapist. He's like, oh yeah. He's like, I just had someone cancel 5 minutes ago. He's like, it usually doesn't happen. Like, I usually don't get cancellations. He's like, come on in an hour. I was like, done. I will be there, man. So
Perfect.
I ended up showing up and when he started working on me, he said he couldn't even feel my C2 or C3. He said just everything was just so inflamed and I was just so tight everywhere. And so I laid down on his table, again, having sharp pains in my chest and everything like that. Within probably the first minute and a half, I could lay there flat without having like major shooting pains down my chest. He started just kind of working out, I guess, what my muscles were just so tense and everything like that, so inflamed, that was causing really bad compression at the time. So then that was kind of my first step at being able to get out of that really dark kind of hole that I was in, unfortunately. And probably about a week or two after that, I did have that thought of like, I had that bug bite. Was that a tick bite? Right. So I started talking to my, and I knew nothing about Lyme disease at the time. I didn't know how horrible it was or anything like that. I thought it was something that you'd have a big old bullseye rash and you know that you've got a tick bite, right? Or they would be engorging you. I thought that ticks would just bite, they would engorge and stay there. Like you would have to pull them out in order to know that you had a tick bite. And so that kind of crossed my mind. I did talk to my primary care physician about that. I actually switched up primary care physicians at the same office after that guy was trying to give me benzos. I did not trust him after that because I understood my mental state. And I was like, that is crazy. And like, that he would kind of give that to me based on the symptoms that I was talking about. So I switched. It was a younger doctor. He kind of just dismissed that completely as Lyme disease. He basically told me you'd be only the second person I've ever met that has Lyme disease. And so at that point, I was like, oh, I don't have Lyme. That's crazy, right? And fast forward, I mean, I was still extremely sick, but I was pushing through. I was dealing with my, like, just nerve pain that would go up all the way up in my head. Horrible headaches. I would have times where I couldn't see. I got really blurry. I had ended up having really bad POTS symptoms. So I would stand up, and I think it was hyper POTS. It would stand up, it would go up to 140 beats per minute and stay there for 10 or 15 minutes. And like my blood pressure wouldn't drop, it would rise. And like it's a lot of people have it to where your blood pressure will drop and like you'll pass out. For me, it just felt like just this insane amount of pressure in my system. And it was a very weird, and there was times I think it dropped, I got dizzy and stuff like that. But most of the time it would just, my blood pressure would go up with it. And I got diagnosed with POTS, IST, mitral valve prolapse syndrome from dysautonomia. Was dealing with, I couldn't feel when I had to pee, like my whole nervous system was messed up. When I would fall asleep, I'd be in my sleep or awake state and go to the sleep state. I would stop breathing entirely. I would just stop breathing. I believe it was like a form of central sleep apnea. I think my nervous system was just so fried where my autonomic nervous system, it wasn't taking over and I wasn't breathing like I was supposed to when I'm going into my sleep state.
Were you still living with your parents when this was
happening? I was. It was a absolute godsend to be there.
Were they monitoring you during the night or?
So I have a huge issue with not asking for help. A lot of times I went to bed at night not knowing if I'd wake up in the morning. I've talked to other people that have had the same circumstance. I had kind of letters written just for them to find, like I just had it set up and I just had mom, dad on there and just had all my pertinent information to kind of take care of my life and let people know if I were to die. Like it was a very scary experience, but yeah, they kind of knew something was going on. I was telling them that I was just very sick and, but I've always been to someone that I've just tried to take care of things on my own. And if anyone's watching this, don't do that. You need to try to ask for help and talk to people. And it's hard to get help if you're not asking for help. So,
Dan, I want to ask a quick question about this because I'm trying not to interrupt because Alexandra and you were telling a really good story, but it's eerie how similar my story is to yours, my personal story. Yeah. I mean, it's creepy. The passing out being one of your symptoms, being having crazy energy before getting sick, having, you know, all these things, the heart issues, and then the breathing issues. Because I was in the hospital, very similar to what you were describing, and I would just stop breathing. And I never had that before. They had me in triage, I think it was, for like a week and couldn't figure it out. And then they sent me home. And they're like, oh, you know, we don't know what's going on. But how were your doctors responding? Because these are really severe things. When I look back, I'm like, how did I ever accept we don't know. Go home, follow up with a specialist when the symptoms were this severe. So understanding you were sick, how were your doctors responding to you? And then how were you and your family members responding to those doctors? Because there's a huge disconnect with the severity of your symptoms and the way you're being treated, right? So how did you reconcile that?
Yeah, so I can talk about that too, because I have an immense amount of frustration with Western medicine here. I'm sure you guys do as well. So at the time, I was having these just insane oxygen drops out of nowhere. I started doing a lot of research. I found Babesia. I started looking at Babesia and I was like, man, I get air hunger. That's weird. Like, I just have times where I feel like I can't catch my breath and I'll have burning fingertips. I was like, that sounds a lot like Bartonella. And like, my fingertips would just be hurting and on fire. And then also just like arthritis type symptoms. My neck would just pop 1,000 times. And there's days where it just gets so insanely stiff. My skin became extremely stretchy. And my gums were bleeding. So they like talk about EDS. At one point, they were trying to diagnose me with MS. I would have burning pains on my spine. They were talking about doing a spinal tap, but I didn't get to that point. And so these doctors, though, they were seeing these symptoms, but they're also seeing this 30-year-old man that was in amazing shape, which I thought, I mean, they thought I was basically on, excuse me, probably based on who they see on a daily basis, I was in a lot better shape than most people, right? And
Dan, sorry to interrupt again, but let's define what really is good health, right? Because I was told the same thing. Oh, you're in really good health. What did that mean? That meant I was thin and I looked healthy, but I had a horrible diet. I had horrible stress. I had a horrible nervous system. All the things that really mattered were wrong in my life, but I looked okay. Was that true of you as well?
Yeah, it was precisely true. This is where I kind of went down the road of trying to start diagnosing myself in many regards and trying to actually do testing, right? So I bought a heart monitor that would sit on my heart overnight and would actually have in 24 hours of a single lead ECG and track what was going on. I have a monitor that would go on my finger. I would track my saturation levels all night, right? And I go back there and I look at this information and like, I'm getting drops down to 80, 81, 82, and then it would go back up. And during the day, I would get drops, just saturation drops out of nowhere. The most terrifying thing I dealt with the entire time is when you stop breathing, because that is when you're falling asleep, you stop breathing, and your body's like, hey, I don't want you to die. And you go, oh, and you wake up, your heart is racing. Sleep apnea is mechanically so hard on the heart. It is incredibly, I mean, people have heart attacks all the time that have dealt with sleep apnea for a long time. Central sleep apnea is terrifying because it's almost like, why am I not breathing? And it doesn't make any sense. And I'm bringing this to the doctors and they are just testing me and then trying to prescribe me drugs. So it was a very frustrating experience. It was very expensive. At the time, I had a fantastic job. I had the best health insurance money could buy, and still I was paying out of pocket for a lot of stuff. And I was living a very comfortable life. Obviously, I went through a divorce and kind of lost a little bit of what I would say financial security during that time. And then you get hit with this, and it's incredibly expensive. I remember my primary care physician, the younger one that was really tr he was trying to help me. There was a time where we were sending my blood all over the country getting these tests done. And in reality, none of these tests were beneficial to really kind of diagnosing what was happening at the time. And yeah, it's just it. I can't explain to you how frustrating it is having these weird symptoms and then doctors just sending you home, or you being in the ER and just being sent home without any kind of answer of anything. And basically, again, they're like, "Oh, it's got to be anxiety." Like, it's not anxiety. Like, I'm cool as a cucumber. And I
And you were an
like,
insider, Dan. You worked for a pharmaceutical company. You worked for Western
yeah,
medicine. So if
I
anything, they
did.
should want to take care of their own, but they were kind of abandoning you at this point, right? That's the part that's so interesting here.
Yeah, it was a very bizarre experience. And there was a few, they spent a lot more time with me, I think, than some people. I had some cool conversations. Like my cardiologist I had at the time was really good friends with Paul Zoll. I've worked with Zoll for a very long time, on the AD side of the business, and I know that industry very well. And they tried, but they were absolutely dumbfounded. It just and I was sitting there. I can go back to my emails because I would on my chart you can message your physician and kind of go back and forth. And I wanted to keep kind of a log that they had and I had. And if you go back, I mentioned Babesia, I mentioned Lyme disease, I mentioned Epstein-Barr virus, strep, different things that I was experiencing at the time. And I did have strep like eight, fast forward a little bit, I had strep like eight times in a matter of a few months. And so I started bringing up all these different things. I'm like, these symptoms match. Like, this is exactly what's going on. And
Were they
so
receptive
that,
at all to that? Did they say, let me look into that? Or, let's ask a colleague? Or was it very much shut down?
My primary care physician, was so he the one I ended up trying to work with, he was trying to help. He is my age. I'm 35 years old now, or 34 years old now, and he was trying to help me, and he could definitely see it in my eyes, like, dude, like, I don't know what's going on. I can speak somewhat knowledgeably about that. Obviously, I've never had medical like training or anything along those lines, but I understood the premise of the human body. The human body is quite mechanical. It's very kind of it's very cool how the human body works. And in my mind, I've always thought there's a root cause for absolutely everything that happens within the human body. And even to this day now, I still believe that, even more now since I've kind of experienced what I've experienced.
Then how did that impact your professional career? Because a lot of the pharmaceutical world is meant to band-aid things and not get to the root cause. So you're describing yourself as sort of like this hybrid Eastern medicine guy who's stuck and working in Western medicine, but yet you believe there's a true root cause and cure for everything, but you're working for pharmacies that prescribe drugs to band-aid things. Like, that must have been an internal struggle for you in your career as well, right?
Yes and no. So we did a lot. We didn't do too much RX. It was mostly OTC and nutraceuticals that we focused on. It wasn't so much the RX product. I did know a lot of people at like the Pfizers and the J&Js of the world. And so I definitely kind of knew the industry as a whole, or Apotex, or any of those companies you want to throw out there. Like, everyone in that industry, everyone buys and sells from everybody. Everyone knows each other as well. So it's a very interesting industry. There was a struggle in that because like they were trying to prescribe me things like beta blockers that I did not want to take. Like the benzos, like I understand, like, just withdrawal on those types of medications are insane. I didn't want to take anything like that at the time. And I was kind of arguing with my doctors when they're trying to make me take these things. I'm like, no, it's not happening. Like, I just can't. But yeah, it was a huge struggle. And I think at the time, I did trust at least doctors for the most part, right? I didn't like taking medications. There's always been something in my head about that. I think there's a cost to it. But I started losing my trust with doctors rapidly, right? When you're in a really bad situation, you kind of and you don't know what's going on. You're not getting help. You're like, what are these people doing? And I ended up getting to a point where I started spending way too much time researching. And to go back to your question, Matt, I've always operated at a really high level. At the time, I was probably half the age of all the other directors at that company. So I was the youngest person working there at the time. And it was a company that I was growing, and I was trying to help them grow. And just the brain. So as far as work is concerned, brain fog is horrible. You cannot think straight. You cannot stay on task. It's hard to bring things to completion. Even having conversations like we're having right now, it is an arduous task just to be able to follow those trains of thought. And it really impacted me work-wise. I don't think I was as impactful in my job. I wasn't doing as much as I needed to. And I've always been kind of like a freight train. People have said I'm intense, and it was hard to keep up with kind of my normal workflow at the time. So it definitely affected my career very negatively. With that being said, I think I'm incredibly blessed in my situation to where I've been able to have work throughout my entire journey. Very young, I kind of became an SME within a certain industry. And being that subject matter expert, I've always been able to have like a really good job. And there's probably three or four of me that exist in the United States. So it's definitely been a good blessing. But a lot of people, I've known people that have lost jobs. I've known people that have not been able to work. I've known people that have gone through those situations. And I couldn't imagine what some of those people have gone through on their health journey with Lyme disease. So it's very brutal, but yeah, I've been very fortunate, but it did impact me very negatively work-wise. So it was not good. But
All right. I apologize for the interruption, Alexandra. I know I said I wasn't going to talk much in this interview, so I hand it back over to
yeah.
you. Well, yeah, so I want to hear, so you're starting to do your own digging, like we most of us do. We kind of land at becoming our own advocate when Western medicine fails us and we're in a dark place and we're alone and we're lonely and our family and our friends don't understand. All they can see is suffering. So it's either you fight or you die, right? And it sounds like you wanted to fight. You wanted to get back to feeling like you felt, prior to being sick. So tell us a little bit about how you landed at your Lyme diagnosis.
Yeah, so I think so. Lyme was brought up with my doctor. He thought it was just insane, so I kind of put that to rest. At the time, I started doing some traveling. I had a Toyota. It wasn't a 4Runner at the time. It was a Tacoma, but I put a tent on it and I started traveling around the country a little bit. The things I did when I was that sick was insane. I would have times where my ears felt they were completely clogged up. I would go to mountaintops, 12,000 feet up, and like I
Why?
felt
Wait,
so horrible.
I have to ask you, did you just not want to accept that you felt sick and you just said, if I start to act sick, I will be sick. So you said, I'm just gonna keep on and keep going. Is that what was going on?
Yeah, and I figured I was like, if I'm gonna die, I'm gonna die doing something I enjoy doing. Because I
Okay.
had no answers at the time. I just figured I was
Right.
gonna like just die in my sleep or something like that. So I was like, I'm gonna go do it in the West in the gorgeous mountains or something like that. So I was doing that, and like, it was horrible. And like, so what would happen is I would go on a hike, I would be deathly sick for like 3 days and have no energy at all. And so I was just kind of going on my way, trying to live life, and I really started. I'm a very social person. I love people. People make the world go around for me. It's just if the last thing I had in the world was people, I would be a happy camper, right? So at the time, a lot of my friendships, a lot of my relationships with like my family, things like that started to dwindle. I started to really isolate quite a bit. And within that isolation, I was really taking the time to try to understand what was going on. I started looking into diet and lifestyle. At the time, I was still seeing the massage therapist, and that was helping tremendously.
And there was still no diagnosis at this point, right? You're still trying to figure it out.
Yeah, the only diagnosis I had was POTS,
Okay.
dysautonomia, mitral valve prolapse syndrome from dysautonomia. So I had a doctor that wrote a paper on this, and essentially, what we do is stand me up really quickly, listen to my heart, and from my autonomic nervous system just being so dysregulated, my mitral valve would like just act really weird. It's a really good marker for dysautonomia if anyone's trying to ever pinpoint kind of what's going on in the body. And now what we know, and with what we know now, POTS is probably the most prolific thing that people deal with early on. That's a really good gives you a really good idea of kind of what they're dealing with their nervous system. So
No, it's so interesting that
no.
you keep saying dysautonomia because I was in the ER multiple times and every single ER doctor would come to me and say, you have dysautonomia or a dysfunction in your autonomic nervous system. And I was like, what does that mean?
What
Why?
is it? Yeah, what is that? Yeah.
What is that? And no one could answer that for me. And not one doctor has ever answered that for me. And they would do the thing. I'd come in on a gurney. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't feel parts of my body. Then they'd stand me up really fast and they would tell me I had an irregular heartbeat. But again, they would send me home. So it's interesting. And I think that this is a very common thread between a lot of people. Before they get diagnosed, this symptom of the dysautonomia is, you know, it's very frequent. So it's interesting.
Yeah, those idiopathic type of diagnoses are very frustrating for me. I see dysautonomia as a symptom. I know that's horrible because you have Dysautonomia International that's really doing a lot of work to try to help a lot of people that are really dealing with that right now. But I see a lot of people. I still am on some of the support groups, kind of just watching from time to time. And if I see an opportunity to say, hey, you probably should just go get checked by Lyme, try to find a Lyme literate medical doctor, I'll give them maybe a link to Project Lyme's website where you can go find all the different physicians that are out there that might have that type of specialty. But there's a lot of people that I know that are on the POTS page or like on the different dysautonomia pages that I know for a fact they're dealing with Lyme disease, and it's really hard. The issue is, for me, like, you can't go out there and just attack them with all this stuff, because they might be in a situation where I was in, where you can't handle just being bombarded with more information, because you have your family members, you have your friends saying this and that, oh, have you been checked for this? And so you have to be very gentle when you lead people. I'm sure you too, and a lot of people listening to this or watching, you probably have a huge heart for helping others after going through what you've been through, but you have to be very careful not to polarize people to potentially what their condition is. And they're getting advice from 100 people right now, whether it's doctors or family members, and it's very tough. And I try to remember that so I can help other people. So, but yeah, at the time, just dysautonomia. I was basically, conducting my own lab test every day. Like, we talked about the oxygen monitors and the heart monitors. I probably have, I don't know, thousands of hours of ECG things in my computer from back in the day. There was an AI system that would read them, but I would go through and look through a 24-hour period and look what type of ectopic beats I was experiencing at the time, and trying to learn a little bit about that. I started looking into diet, and this is before I was diagnosed with Lyme or knew that I had Lyme. And I started looking at diet. For a while, I went plant-based. That didn't help me at the time, and actually made me a little bit sicker. I know a lot of people it helps. My grandmother has been whole food plant-based for like 8 or 9 years, and she is absolutely thriving. And so I tried that. I started looking into medical journals. I found back in the 1920s where ketogenic diet was being used with babies that had seizures. And so there are some studies and things that have been done over the years where within those ketogenic diets, those people have been tracked from childhood all the way up through adulthood, and they didn't have more issues with seizures and things like that. So I started looking to keto. I was thinking back, I've tried keto in the past. That sucked. I don't want to do keto again. Like, I was always hungry and stuff like that. And then I started looking at like kind of just like protein and fat for those. And some people that were doing something called carnivore, I was like, that is the weirdest thing in the world. So then I was like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to make myself sicker. So I started looking into like cholesterol. What happens if you have higher cholesterol? And then I started seeing where some people are like okay with it, and like some doctors were talking about carnivore. I was like, okay. And so I tried that out. Within 3 days, I bought pea strips to put myself in ketosis. So at the time, I tried a carnivore diet, and that was working very well for me. It took out my brain fog almost instantly. I was monitoring my ketones. I did a 18-hour fast with a 6-hour feed window. I was extremely strict. I'm kind of, so not to get into my background, but I'm kind of like a redneck and a hippie at the same time. So like, I was buying like regenerative farm food and like grass-fed stuff, and I wanted just I think factory farming is horrible, whether it's for plants or animals. And so I was just trying to buy just really good quality foods. And this was in January of 2022 where I started eating this way. And So in 2 weeks, I lost like 20 pounds. I started feeling a lot better, and I actually started kind of getting my life back at the time.
Just from incorporating more protein.
Yeah, so I think so. I don't know. I mean, everyone's different. Obviously, but none of this is medical device that or medical advice that I'm sharing with anybody today. This is just something that helped me on my journey, and I think, and it's one thing. I don't think there's one thing that helped me 100%. I would say this. It was probably the biggest 180 for me because it helped me take care of my brain fog, and
It did the same thing for me too.
Yeah,
So
same as well for me. And I think we hear that a lot. So I think that's a really important tip for a lot of people. It may not work for everybody, but probably for a lot of us. So I think it's a really important tip.
And I think a lot of us that are dealing with Lyme are protein starved, unfortunately. I think that protein, when you start getting good protein and good nutrients in you, it's an absolute just life-changing type of situation. So I suggest a lot of people, the first thing you need to focus on is sleep and diet, and that will get you on your feet because it's really hard to make good decisions when you have horrible brain fog. So I had the opportunity to be able to kind of take another look at kind of my life and what's going on in my life. I had an amazing opportunity where I had kind of a chiropractor named Dan also at my church. We just started chatting one day. I pulled up with my 4Runner that was all set for overlanding. He had a 4Runner and he's like, dude, that thing is so cool. And he's like, hey, we just started chatting. And then somehow something came up about Lyme disease. I was like, oh yeah. I was like, I'm kind of dealing with some weird symptoms right now. I was like, I don't know if I have Lyme or not. He's like, oh, my wife specializes in that stuff. And she was a chiropractor and she has a long history in that. It was at church too. So I was like, oh, that's awesome. I'd love to spend some time with your wife. So I went up there. She's like, the first thing we need to do is you need to get a test done with Vibrant. I was like, all right, let's do it. So I ponied up the $1,000 for the tick-borne 2.0, got it done. Four different things of Borrelia popped up, Babesia, Epstein-Barr virus, strep, pandas. Like there was a bunch of things that popped up and very solid tests.
How did you feel when you got those results back? Talk to us about, were you relieved? Were you scared? Were you happy that you had a diagnosis, but also at the same time concerned about how am I going to heal this, knowing what you knew at that point about how hard it is to cure Lyme. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, so I got the email results back. And so when you see something like that and you've been so lost, and I'm not an emotional person, but like I almost started crying.
I
Almost
did
out of
cry.
touch.
I was
Yeah,
hysterical.
I was like, son of a nutcracker. I was like, I have some information. Cause I don't, I'm okay being sick at that point. Like I'm like, okay, but I need to know what my plan is going forward to not be sick anymore. And so I didn't know what to do. I had no idea. I had no guidance at all, other than I loved the diet I was eating, but I still had symptoms. It was just reducing inflammation at that point. And so I kind of had a little bit of advice from her at the time. And I saw another practitioner in Iowa when I was out traveling and stuff like that. And she had some advice with the supplement program that they had and like the detox program. I did some stuff with her, but I ended up not liking what they were doing. And I ended up kind of going without treatment for a few months and really focusing on just diet, lifestyle. I was laying out in the sun every day. I was going out and walking as much as I could walk. And I was eating really good food. I was sticking to my feed window. Lots and lots of salt, just making sure that my pot symptoms would stay at bay. I was consuming like 7 to 10,000 milligrams of sodium every day, like just huge amounts of salt. And in doing this, I was so terrified at the beginning of like my cholesterol going up. So I had plenty of labs at the time. And the salt intake, like everyone's like, good, couldn't give you high blood pressure. My blood pressure was dropping. It was
Perfect.
going to very, very good levels. My cholesterol was very balanced at the time, slightly elevated, but not too much. I did a CAC eventually. My CAC was zero. There's nothing, no buildup within, I guess, arteries or whatever, wherever the CAC is done in your on your thoracic cavity. So I was like, all right, you know what, this is looking good. But and then at the time I started dating someone that I'm no longer dating her, but still things are amicable with her. But she was someone who was very sick as well. And we at first we weren't dating. We were, I think it was like a dysautonomia page, and someone said, "What are you doing to help with your dysautonomia symptoms?" I think I said carnivore and salt. And she's like, "Oh, that's awesome." It was like on Instagram, and we just started hanging out. And she's down in Florida. I was down there for work one day. I was like, "Hey, you just want to kick it at the beach?" And she's like, "Yeah." And so we just hung out at the beach and started chatting. And at the time, she was very sick. She was eating just cauliflower, and that was it. And just she couldn't eat anything. Like everything was making her throat swell up. And so she started learning about like MCAS and things of that nature. And again, like I was like, "Hey, might want to try carnivore." So she started getting like steaks, and we kind of learned about histamines in meats, right? If you have MCAS issues, you don't want aged meat, you don't want ground meat. You want meat from somewhere like Billy Doe Meats that has like lamb that's frozen like almost immediately. So we started ordering stuff like that. And she turned around, she did like a complete 180 once she started getting some nutrition in her, which is really cool.
Dan, can I ask, jump in on that? Sorry, Alexandra. I know
That's
I can't keep my
okay.
mouth shut here, but this is a really important topic to so many people because there is a large subset of the Lyme community where they have severe GI issues and severe limitations with what they can eat and not have a flare, whether it be stomach pain or, as you mentioned, like your throat kind of swelling up or whatever it may be. So we eat very limited foods, but protein and carnivore is really important, and it's, something that many of us may want to try. So you just described some things for people that are sensitive to MCAS and histamines, where they can still go on a high protein carnivore diet, but there's certain things they need to do. Can you just go into a little bit more detail? You mentioned like almost like frozen immediately meats and things like that. I think that's a really important tip for people who want to do that but don't know how to because they're nervous about how they're going to respond when they eat those types of foods.
Again, so everyone is different. But if you're dealing with some of these things and you're trying carnivore and you're having these situations with meat where you're like, it's still causing me to react, there are some meats that have very high histamine thresholds in them. If you're going to eat them, your body is not going to like it. You're not going to be able to process those histamines, unfortunately. And people that deal with the throat closing up, that is probably incredibly terrifying. I've never dealt with that. That's something where I would carry an EpiPen with me wherever I would go if I ever dealt with a situation like that. I know some people have had some success with things like Zyrtec, just having that around, just for those really bad situations. But yeah, there are butchers out there that will take and butcher an animal, and they will almost immediately freeze that meat, and they'll send that meat to you. And what you'll do is thaw that out and almost immediately cook it. And that will usually help with the histamines. For people that are dealing with MCS, you probably want to stay away from things like chicken, turkey, eggs, dairy. Things like that can be incredibly just inflammatory and high histamine. Obviously, certain fermented foods might not be good for you as well. So you just have to kind of let your body start healing. And then I promise once you start healing, you'll be able to start including those things back into your diet. A lot of people deal with a lot of skin irritations. I think something within Eastern medicine says that your gut is displayed on your skin. And I think that's probably a really good rule of thumb for many people. I know some people deal with like eczema and things like that. And I had gut issues before being sick with Lyme. I had horrible indigestion sometimes. I haven't had really hardly any gut issues since then. I think the worst gut issues I had in my whole health journey is when I started taking probiotics, and just the probiotics I was taking, a very, very small amount of people are allergic to them. I was part of that very small group, unfortunately. So it just destroyed my gut. And so my practitioner I'm going to now, she's like, "Let's not do that again." So, but for the most part, my gut is doing fantastic. And so a lot of people are like, "Man, that's a restrictive diet." I turned my life upside down and I wanted to get better. And I would say I'm 90% better now. I'm still dealing with some symptoms here and there, but I'm living a very normal life, right? So I have a fantastic career where I manage a big team. And I'm not trying to brag or anything. I'm hoping this is inspirational for some people. I went from being bedridden for basically 2 weeks and having horrible brain fog and not functioning well with work. And I'm to a point now where, sorry, tearing my mouth. I'm at a point now where I have a job where I can work probably sometimes 80 hours a week. I shouldn't do that. That's
That's
I
not
don't
healthy,
recommend
Dan. What we talked about earlier, what's really healthy and what's not healthy, right?
Yeah, I don't recommend people doing that, but it's a job, it's a dream job that I really love doing, and sometimes it doesn't feel like work. So I love that. I'm on two separate committees with Global Lyme Alliance, things that are starting up there. I'm working with two companies, basically two startup businesses right now, for skincare, and then also potentially for diagnosing or tick testing. So certain things like that I've been working on. With my social media, I do a lot of traveling with my van, and I'm working with a lot of brands that manufacture products for those types of off-road vehicles, and doing things with those companies right now, which is a lot of fun as far as creating content. I have been going to expos and traveling around the country. These are things I couldn't imagine doing 2 years ago, let alone 1 year ago. And just this past weekend, for Easter weekend, a lot of family was in town, and I was outside throwing around a football, running around.
Amazing.
And it is, if you're willing to turn your life upside down, it is possible to start your recovery process and start going into the right direction. It is very hard. Eating meat, I'm a huge foodie, eating meat and salt, and I had a little bit of mustard here and there. Just eating that for a year straight is extremely hard because I love bread. I love desserts. I have a huge sweet tooth.
Yep.
Yeah, it's
That's me
not
too.
good. A good thing. So.
It's so important that you're talking about this because so I was one of the people who had mast cell activation syndrome that didn't present traditionally. I never had eczema. My throat didn't close up. I wasn't sneezing. I didn't have itchy eyes. I just felt like I was dying and I had no idea what it was. And it took some peeling back of the onion for them to realize that I had the mast cell activation after the Lyme, after the parasites, after the mold. Like I had a whole list of symptoms, but I was a vegan for 11 years before I had Lyme. And when I was told that I had to, not only do you have Lyme and five co-infections and all these things, but now you have to eat meat. And not only do you have to eat meat, you have to eat red meat. Every time I took a bite of meat, I was hysterically crying. And I still to this day don't enjoy eating the meat. But I have to tell you, like you said, it changed everything for me in the best way possible. And so I think for people there that are listening that were like me, maybe in the beginning, that say, I don't eat meat, I'm vegan, or it's an animal thing. I love animals. I don't, the agro and the farming, agriculture and the farming here is so horrible in this country. So people are concerned. But I think you made a really good point. And I know that a tip that I can give other people since you brought that up is I now thank my food whenever I eat it. And I know that that sounds so crazy, but every time I take a bite of meat, I thank the animal and I said, I'm really sorry that you had to die and I'm really sorry and I hope it was a peaceful death and I'm so sorry, but thank you for help nourishing my body because whatever it is, people who have Lyme or co-infections, the protein, you're so depleted of everything, it really brings you back to life. So I'm really glad that you brought that up and it's such a commitment to not only to heal from this, but to change. You can't just go out for dinner anymore. And I mean, right now, I'm not eating soy, gluten, dairy, sugar, grains, oils. I mean, the list could go on. Is it fun? No. But would I ever go back? No, because you feel so good doing it. So food is a huge part of healing. And I thank you for bringing that up because maybe people that are listening who are suffering will take this leap and try it and really realize how much vitality it'll bring them.
I can't, yeah, same thing. I cannot stress enough. So it just doesn't stop with certain things. I mean, you really start looking into, okay, what oils are horrible, right? Like, what things should I not be consuming? Should I not be drinking out of plastic, right? I mean, like, you start looking at everything.
Everything.
Yeah, it's very, and I, again, like, I don't think there's one thing that has turned my life around. I think it's a combination of everything combined. And
So
again, I
did you, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but
okay.
the food started this journey, right? The food kind of gave you that upper hand. And then did you only heal yourself with food, or did you also do a combination of antibiotics and herbs and all of the other things?
Yeah, so I apologize. I'll get to that part for sure. So the yeah, food stabilized me is the best way to.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think food really stabilized the infl it cut down inflammation is the best way I can explain kind of what food did for me. When I started treatment, I didn't like what the first person was doing that I was seeing. It was extremely expensive. Please, everyone, be careful if you're going out and looking for help, because there are people out there that will take advantage of you in your horrible state. I know this sounds crazy, but there are people that take advantage of sick people. It's very unfortunate. Not that this person was trying to do that, but I just thought the cost was insane after I spent so much money prior. I ended up going to a viewing of The Quiet Epidemic. No, not quite. It was I'm not crazy, I'm sick. And there's a viewing here in Cincinnati, and I just saw it pop up. I think it was on one of the line pages or something like that time. And it was at a little, and I can't speak more highly of this place enough. It's this little practice down in Cincinnati called Foundations Wellness, and the practitioner Teresa there was awesome. I met with them just for that viewing, and we stayed after, and we were talking for a little while, and it was just a really therapeutic experience being around other people that are going through that. And also, she herself actually had Lyme disease, and she came from Western medicine. She was a nurse practitioner her entire career. She had Lyme, and no one could help her. So she's like, "What's going on?" Well, she started figuring things out. And she's like, "You know, I can help other people." And she started that practice there. And so she's very, very involved with Johns Hopkins, with ILADS. Like she's very involved in the community. And they're kind of going the route based on kind of some of the information that John Hopkins has been looking to with the efficacy of certain herbal treatments when it comes to Lyme. And so what they're doing is making this, and at the time, what I was taking prior was pretty tough on my system for the most part. Like a lot of people do with herxing. I think herxing has a lot to do with just your body's ability to detox those horrible things that you're killing off. And that's just my opinion. I don't know if that's the truth. Someone else with a lot more knowledge will know more about me that than I do. But this liposomal oil formula that they make it per person based on your symptoms or your test results. And it's very gentle, and it's very easy to meter what you're taking. So I started taking that, also in the state of Tennessee. So I was dealing with Babesia. Babesia is like malaria's cousin, and so I was like, I gotta get myself some ivermectin. So I ended up. I know a lot of people will use some methods of getting ivermectin, but again, I'd like being able to meter everything very precisely. The state of Tennessee has made ivermectin an OTC. Basically, you have to meet with a pharmacy. Not all the pharmacies do this. If you go to a few compounding pharmacies in Tennessee, ivermectin is over the counter, and you can get in 3, 6, 12, or 18 milligram dosages. That's something I included into my treatment. I started taking some herbal things and some of the detoxing products that Cellcore had. I started just kind of going down that route with the guidance of Teresa. In my opinion, the best way to go about this is you have to become your own doctor. No one knows your body better than you do. You need to do the research. You need to try to at least have a baseline understanding of what you're doing. And you need a good practitioner to guide you along the way. And also the thing that I've loved about Foundations Wellness is they're incredibly affordable for what they are able to do, and just the guidance they're able to give you throughout that journey. And that's been a fantastic experience for me. I consider them all friends now. They're really, really good people. And we're trying to, with the support of Global Lyme Alliance, we're working on doing just a get working on getting a get together, like a monthly get together where people just come together. Because when you're in a room with other people that know what you're going through, it's incredibly therapeutic. And maybe bringing some board games like Catan or some card games and just sitting around and enjoying each other's presence and being able to talk to one another. So that's something we're doing down there in Cincinnati. I think it's just a special little place that's kind of not well known. And I think a lot of people around this area would benefit. And I've tried to push some people I've met here in the Cincinnati area just towards them as much as I can. So, but that's what I've been doing for treatment. I've been doing that, and I'll probably stay on that treatment for quite a while. I don't foresee myself getting off that treatment. I still have weird symptoms from time to time. I still have ectopic beats, unfortunately, and those weird circumstance. So I was very sick and still traveling a lot. And I was down in the middle of nowhere, Texas. There's a national park called Big Bend. And for some reason, I decided going in the hot springs was an awesome idea. And there's like algae and all types of stuff, but it's on the Rio Grande River. You're hundreds of miles from the nearest town. So I went down there. Went in the hot tub, is absolutely gorgeous. Or not the hot tub, the hot springs, and absolutely gorgeous down there. Well, I drove to Austin the next day to hang out with a friend. And that day I felt just almost every other beat was an ectopic beat. So what in the world is going on? So I went to just an emergency room for them to run an ECG. They looked at it and said, "You're good. You're having a lot of ectopics." Went back and just went to a cardiologist, had them take a look at that as well. And with my monitor, I took a look at it. I was having about 20,000 ectopics a day. I don't know what triggered that. So it could, and so there's a couple of things where I think it made things worse. I don't know if it was at the time cedar, like they call it cedar fever down in Texas, just the pollen from the trees could have triggered that for me. Something in the hot springs could have triggered that for me. And unfortunately, that is one of the symptoms that still I'm dealing with to this day and really trying to get rid of. It's getting better little by little, but it's definitely taking some time to get rid of. And it happens when I'm even working out. So I'll be in a full workout or doing something, and it's just, you can feel it just pop. And then also, I still believe I have pretty bad mitochondrial dysfunction. If I exert myself pretty well, the next 2 days I am down for the count. So it's, and the best thing I can tell people that like they're dealing with just not being able to work out is just take it very slow, little by little. I'm getting to a point now where I'm able to start building muscle again. And it feels very good being able to build muscle. So I think old age is basically time trying to take muscle away from us. So but yeah, so it's kind of it's kind of one of those things where I'm like, even if I stay at 90% the rest of my life, I'd actually be very happy.
I
I'm
know.
living a very normal life right now.
Yeah,
So
I think that's great. And that's so wonderful that you've come such a long way. And I'm sorry you're still struggling with, some lingering symptoms, which I'm sure you'll figure out. But can you tell us a little bit about, I know we briefly discussed this. So you were on this journey, you treated with some pharmaceuticals and some herbs and these tinctures that they're tinctures that they were giving you that were custom for you, or are they a pill?
yeah, so the are you talking about the herbal treatment?
Yeah, is that was formulated, you said specifically for you.
It's just like a big thing of like liposomal oils, I guess.
Okay.
And what they'll do is they'll put different herbs in there in a combination based on your symptoms and based on studies that like John Hopkins has done in the past.
Okay. All right, great. So you're doing all of these things and you're really committed. Can you share with everybody the emotional side of how it feels to start to feel better, and how you can go from not wanting to wake up, or like you said, if you got hit by a Mack truck, that would be okay. At what point did it change for you, and what advice can you give to the listeners about how they can get there as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So, it's actually hard to believe when you start feeling better. You almost don't feel like it's reality, unfortunately, because your reality has just become such a almost a tormenting time in your life. It really is frustrating. Life is hard when you're sitting there dealing with just all these crazy symptoms. And a lot of times, I think a lot of people have like almost like a rotation of symptoms. Like they'll rotate. Sometimes it's not even all at the same time. It's just little by little. Something I experienced through recovery is almost like a playing backwards of symptoms. I brought that up with my practitioner. I said, "Has anyone ever like brought this up with you? I feel like I'm going in reverse now with all these symptoms I've experienced." Kind of from start to finish. Like I've experienced these things recently, and the more I recover, the more symptoms that I had in the beginning are starting to kind of rear their ugly face. But so getting to the point of that is, I mean, you have to be incredibly disciplined. I can't stress that enough. I have met people that are dealing with Lyme disease and they cannot get out of their own way, unfortunately. And I'm not trying to be hard on anybody or say anything tough, but instead of focusing on the things that you know that can help you, you're focusing on trying to research and look into more and more data. And the best thing you can do is take your phone and just throw it in the ocean. I can't stress enough just just sitting there and just for hours and hours and hours researching how detrimental that is to your recovery. Doing one or two things every day is going to change your outcome dramatically versus not doing those things. And go on the short walks, go lay out in the sun and get some good sun, eat the right food. Don't be tempted by the wrong foods. When you start feeling better, you're going to go back and think, I can go eat these foods again. And well, all it's going to do is potentially cause some of the inflammation. I will say I was very strictly carnivore for about a year. And I would say I'm probably 90, 95% carnivore now. There's a few things that I've been able to introduce kind of as I would call them treats in my diet, but it's something like chicken coconut curry or something like that, or
Right.
chicken eggs coconut curry, where I'd love just having those spices. But again, it's all organic ingredients that I'm using, and I'm cooking them in a way that I think is very good. So it's just be disciplined and flip your life upside down. You'll have to do that to try to recover quickly. And I'm not ignorant to the fact that I know I've kind of recovered kind of quickly in my circumstance. I know people have been dealing with things for 25 years, and it's absolutely heartbreaking for me to see that. And I just can't stress enough to really, really go out there and make a difference. Be your own doctor and just flip your life upside down. So when you start feeling better too, you're gonna want to do a lot. Slow down, don't do a lot of things. You're gonna want to go hike and do all these crazy things. Just gradually allow those things back into your life, and I promise you'll build back up to it, which is the goal. So
Oh, that's really, really good advice. And I think also for the listeners, you mentioned, do your research, but don't get swallowed by the information. But really, this needs to be led by some form of practitioner, whether that's a Western doctor that you find that's helping you, functional, whoever it is that you can find, but someone should help you manage all this. It's a lot of information. It's a lot of day-to-day emotional, there's the emotional aspect. It's the diet. It's the going back to get the lab. So finding someone that you trust is really important as well.
Yeah, I can't stress that enough. I'm so blessed to have who I have now. And so another topic I want to bring up too is just environmental. That's something I've been very cognizant of, right? Pesticides, I tested very high for pesticides, unfortunately. I live in Ohio where there's cornfields everywhere, so I'm not surprised. And also heavy metals and things like that, and also mold toxicity. I know people that would not get better until they started addressing the mold toxicity, or even got it.
Agree. Yeah.
Yeah, but you have to address that because your body can only do so much,
Right.
unfortunately. So,
Yeah, and I do you have any tips about how you addressed the pesticides, and is there something special that you do to prepare your food that you could share with everybody?
yeah, absolutely. So let me get to why I even through being sick have been out, and so I it. So I don't know if I talked about this. I talked before we started recording. I have a van that's like a camper van. And at the time when I was first sick, I had a 4Runner. And for anyone who says they cannot eat carnivore, I ate carnivore strictly on the road in the middle of nowhere. I had an air fryer that I powered with a Jackery battery unit, and I was cooking my food with solar power essentially in the middle of nowhere.
Wow.
So it was probably like the hardest way to have a strict diet, but I did it and I loved
It.
it. And but being outside, so at the time, being indoors was I felt horrible being indoors. I could tell a difference. And so what I would do is go travel around the country, work remotely, and sometimes be in the mountains, which is not good. If you have babesia, being in the mountains is not great.
Yeah.
Just as an FYI, until you kind of get that figured out. But I was recovering. I felt a lot quicker when I was out in the wilderness and out and about rather than being confined to a house. So at the time, early on, I was with my parents. There was probably some things in that house that was detrimental to me at that time. I was probably building up certain burdens. So fast forward, I ended up getting a van, and I've spent I've the first year I got that van, I put 55,000 miles on it, and I probably spent more than 60 or 70% in the van. And it was my own little oasis, to where it was brand new. I know there wasn't any mold issues or anything like that. I was preparing my food. Basically, I would go find regenerative farms, or I would go to like a Whole Foods and try to buy at least like grass-fed, grass-finished meat. I used a lot of Redmond salt, the huge amount of it. I mean, pounds and pounds of it, and lots of water. Obviously, when you're in a state of ketosis, your body doesn't retain electrolytes and fluids very well. So you want to make sure to keep your electrolytes up, because if you do not, you can put yourself into what is called a keto flu, and you will feel horrible. And so my food, I had a ceramic coated air fryer. I tried to stick with meats that were low histamine, even though I don't think I was dealing with histamine issues. My practitioner thought I was, so I wanted to focus on that. And just the air fryer is my best friend. If you're struggling right now and cooking just seems like a insurmountable task, buy yourself an air fryer. That's one of the biggest things I did to make my life easier.
Okay.
So
yes.
The steak is, I'm actually like famous around my friends groups for my air fryer steak. It is absolutely delicious. I will take Redmond Cherrywood smoked salt and put that on, and I will air fry the steak with that. And it is insanely good. So that's kind of what I would do when I wanted a little bit of flavor with my food. And, but it's easy to clean. It's so easy to cook, and it will make your life less complicated. And that's one thing you've got to do when you're in recovery, right? You don't have energy to almost do anything. In the dysautonomia world, they talk about the spoons. You only have so many spoons. And so you have to pick and choose what things you're going to be doing during that day, and prioritize your basic needs, right? Sleep, water, food. And if it's work, sometimes it has to be work as one of your basic needs, right? So that's the advice I have. I literally became homeless to feel better. So
I love that you're saying this, because part of my journey, and I know part of so many other people's journey, is really getting back to the basics. And we've come such a long way from the fundamentals and the basics of just being alive. And we are constantly flooded with information. We're on social media, we're watching TV, we're getting a million emails per minute. We don't stop and chew our food. We don't sit down, and we're not digesting and resting because of that. And I think nature is such a big part of this healing journey. And I know with myself, grounding was huge for me. I mean, just going and putting my feet, and I still to this day, I have to admit, I still have a hard time putting my feet in grass without having PTSD. And I don't even know when I was bit by a tick, but it's always in the back of my mind. But I live on the beach. Going to the beach or hugging a tree. I know that sounds crazy, but really just getting back to the basics is so healing and is so energizing to our body. And we're giving our body ions. And I think that's really great that you did that, even feeling so sick and tired and having those challenges. You just went back to fundamentals. And I think that helped with you. It seems like it really helped in your healing.
It helped tremendously. So I've always been very driven, just, personally in my life. So not only my career, but when I was playing sports, school is a different story. I actually was not very driven in school. It was just a monotonous exercise for me. I didn't see a lot of value in it, unfortunately, but somehow I have a pretty, pretty successful career, which has been fantastic. So it was just a absolute, just boring situation for me when I was younger. But I've always tried to do hard things and push myself. Even when I was sick, going out and traveling was the hard thing. It was, but at the same time, I was listening to audiobooks. I was listening to podcasts. I was listening to information that was helping me on my journey for healing. There's videos on my Instagram, and like everyone talks about how Instagram is not really reality. That was almost reality for me all the time. There's a video I posted up, and I wanted to take the time to do it, but I was on, there's a place called Clarks Fork Canyon in Wyoming, right on the border of Montana and Wyoming. The Yellowstone River runs through there, and I would go park there. There's nobody around. I'd listen to the river. I'd sit there and sip on my dandelion tea or something like that and just relax. And like, that's not only just amazing memories, but that time was just so therapeutic for me. I had Starlink. I could connect if I want to, but if I didn't want to, I could shut everything off. There's a lot of information out there about a lot of people really not doing well with EMF. I do not know the science behind it, but a lot of people really have concerns that EMF is furthering like maybe mold growth or something like that.
Yeah,
And
I'm actually dealing with that right now. So I know all about that. Yeah.
So a lot of people talk about that, and like I can't really speak to that very knowledgeably, but that's something I tried reducing too, right? So it's all these little things that you do all, I think, make a big difference in your life. And for the rest of my life, if I can, my goal is to climb mountains again and go sprinting. I mean, prior to getting sick, I didn't go to Mount Everest because I didn't feel like it. Like I before being sick, like I did whatever I wanted to do. And little did I know, I was eating horribly. I was eating things that were setting me up to get sick one day, and were to where my body did not have the ability to fight those things off. So, I truly believe that, like, let's say you might have a family member or something that might be sick, and you're healthy yourself. Take care of yourself, work on your diet and do all those things. There are people that test positive for Lyme disease almost their entire life. They have family members that have been very sick. It's very possible that they have been able just to fight off just the infection taking over. And I think everyone needs to be concerned with this, especially if you're in the Northeast. Unfortunately, right now, ticks have absolutely spread all over the country. A lot of people think it's only in one part here or there. They love hopping on animals or birds, and those birds can fly a long distance. And so what's happened over time is these ticks that are infected are all over the place. So I think this is really something everyone needs to start talking about and thinking about. Unfortunately, it's really hard to get traction in what is considered like the mainstream media nowadays, and really try to get people to understand those things. So yeah, it's a whole thing. And if anyone ever wanted to reach out to me and ask me any questions, you'd feel free. The best way to do is probably my just Instagram. It's just Dan W. Axel, and you can reach out to me there. And I'd love to be able to help you or try to point you in a certain direction. I don't have any medical device for you, but I can share some of my best practices that helped me in my journey. So,
Dan, I'm going to repeat that again. So your Instagram is Dan W Actual. So DanWactual, correct?
Dan W. Actual. So I post some things on there that tick related, and also just kind of some of my adventures. I think it's really cool to be able to share that with people that I'm able to do that. I mean, kind of, I told you in the beginning when I was extremely sick, like both my ears were felt like they were completely clogged up. My POTS was through the roof. Like I would sit there with a little meter looking at them, like, all right, 140 beats per minute. I'll have to just chill for a little bit and hydrate. But I was off-roading and just, I mean, sometimes like 4 or 5 hours from like a hospital. I didn't care. Like I was like, I'm gonna go send it, and if I die, I'm gonna do it doing something I enjoy doing. So I don't recommend that for everybody. I think for me it was very therapeutic, and I think with the Andrew Huberman had another neurologist on his podcast one time, and they were talking about when you do hard things, it creates other pathways within your brain, and it kind of creates a certain, I forget what they were talking about, but essentially the thing is that it makes you more resilient. It makes you tougher. It makes you better at learning. It just really helps you. And I know it's very, very hard when you're sick and when you're in a deep hole, but you got to get out of that hole. And it's the best advice I got.
Well, Dan, I can't thank you enough for joining our Tick Bootcamp podcast. I mean, first of all, you shared so much hope and inspiration to our listeners. And secondly, you provided us with so many tips and tricks to heal, which is really important for people that are listening and looking for shortcuts, low cost, no cost solutions. And you've provided all of those. So thank you so much. And Alexandra, thank you so much for coming back to co-host. You both have been wonderful today.